Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello and welcome to another broadcast of the Jim Benson Show, conservative news and commentary addressing the issues that concern you here on the BBS radio and television network. As usual, we have a lot of video material to present on today's show, so let's get into it. After a brief overview of some of the recent events of interest and subject matter of the videos. We all know Elon Musk and his team with the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, a huge debt of gratitude for their amazing work in ferreting out the staggering fraud, waste, and corruption within the federal government and its implications for the rest of the world. The bootleg media serving the globalist oligarchs and elites around the world keep raging about Musk and DOGE. The other day I saw a headline in, I believe it was Britain's Daily Mail, claiming Tesla investors are rebelling to the point of almost insurrection against Musk over the recent drop in Tesla stock. I think this is a lot of drivel. However, I would not be surprised at investor dismay in this matter. Still, people have to keep in mind the bigger picture. If we cannot save the country, there will be no Tesla stock for individual investors, or probably anyone else if the political left gets its way. Musk realizes if he doesn't act in the best interest of the country by doing what he's doing, we could well have not have a country for him to operate his businesses in. There are so many good things happening on so many fronts, it's hard to keep up with it all these days. But that's a problem I'm happy to have. Still, the political left and their globalist elite allies are attempting to thwart Donald Trump and his administration at every turn, primarily currently through activist so-called liberal judges. And they are, the political left, that is, are clearly plotting their with their leftist politician allies for a political comeback and much more persecution in the future of their political opponents. I get so irritated when I hear the word liberal. This is the cover and euphemism the political left has given itself. These are not the classical liberals of Western civilization rebelling against the stifling and antiquated ways of the establishments of centuries ago. Liberals today are in fact communist or communist sympathizers. As former darling of the political left in America, David Horowitz has said, today's Democratic Party is the Communist Party. And unfortunately, that Communist Party, the Democratic Party, is often aided and abetted, using those terms, by rhino Republican allies. Anyway, here's an overview of today's program, video clips, which, as usual, I'm playing back-to-back to save time and get more material presented. The first video is from The Alex Jones Show, April 22, on his embattledinfowars.com website, rebroadcast on x.com, rumble.com, and elsewhere. The clip is of Jones talking about the pending possible sale and closure of InfoWars at auction, resulting from what Jones describes as leftist kangaroo courts finding Jones and his business liable for an incredible more than $1 billion in a defamation judgment. This is the result of InfoWars featuring a claim or claims that the Sandy Hook, Connecticut elementary school massacre of some years ago was fake. The case which Jones is appealing, will appeal, has been dragging on for years, but due to the judgment against him, Jones has had to declare bankruptcy and forfeit most of his assets. He's moving his operations at show to his new The Alex Jones Network on X.com and has repeatedly been railing about what he alleges is appalling corruption of the judiciary and court systems involved directly or indirectly with his case. On the note of judicial corruption and activist judges, you are probably aware of the so-called liberal judges' rulings across the country stalling and stopping the Trump administration's mass deportations of criminal aliens ushered into the country by the criminal, truly criminal, sickeningly corrupt Biden administration, and aided and abetted by the United Nations and non-governmental organizations, or NGOs, which we have again discovered have been funded by your tax dollars for years. Today's second video clip is from Dr. Steve Turley's YouTube channel discussing how President Trump appears to be gearing up to get Congress to pass a law suspending the legal requirement of habeas corpus legal proceedings for illegal aliens being mandated by these activist judges. Democrats are hysterically claiming deportation of criminal aliens without due process puts us all in jeopardy. But mass illegal immigration from the third world is, as Elon Musk recently pointed out, the key to establishing a permanent Democrat voting majority in this country in order to impose the Democrats' Marxist revolution on America, which they have been working at for years. Today's fourth video, the third video clip is also from Dr. Turley's show April 18, discussing Trump's recent executive order on election integrity in an attempt to end the massive election fraud we've all been witnessing for so many years. The fourth video today is again from Dr. Turley's show on YouTube, this time from April 23, and discussing the globalist and totalitarian promoting World Economic Forum, which thanks to Doge, we have once again discovered has been largely funded by hundreds of millions of your tax dollars. This time Turley discusses World Economic Forum founder and head, the infamous Klaus Schwab, being officially investigated by his own organization's board of directors over allegations of financial corruption, and what this means for the future of this bizarre, Orwellian, totalitarian, futurist, globalist organization promoting enslavement of the U.S. and rest of the world's populations. Lastly today, we will see Zach DiGregorio, host of the Wolves and Finance show on YouTube, from an April 20 posting, explaining what he sees as the benefits of Trump's tariff policies. In his broadcast, I think DiGregorio incorrectly states that former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton got $500,000, $500,000, for a single speech in Russia. In fact, it was her husband, another member of the so-called Clinton crime family, former President Bill Clinton, who was flown to Moscow and got the $500,000 for one of his, for me, vacuous speeches. I didn't hear that speech, but all of them sound the same, vacuous, or given in the same vacuous manner from my standpoint. But not everybody feels that way. Some people are mesmerized by Clinton's speeches. Not me. Anyway, I believe this was around the time the U.S. State Department under Hillary Clinton approved a business deal that gave the Russian government control of 20% of strategic U.S. uranium production. Although this video doesn't mention it, it was reported in the video and book, Clinton Cash, that the supposed charitable Clinton Foundation received some $147 million, if I recall correctly, in donations from entities associated with the Russian government before the uranium deal was approved. Okay, let's get started on those videos.
When you're watching this broadcast, remember the bad guys don't want us on air. And they're working around the clock to get us off the air. And despite the fact that they've been caught in what I just mentioned and a lot more, it would take hours to go over, and we've done those presentations and laid out the documents, the facts. That despite the fact that they have already been exposed in all this, they're still moving forward. Just like Jamie Raskin said 2 days ago, one of their top operatives. He said, we will be back in power. We will take America over. We're going to punish and persecute everyone that facilitated what's happening now. And what's being facilitated? Deporting violent gang members, controlling the border, massive fentanyl already being cut coming in, stabilizing our industries, boosting energy production, trying to stop major wars valiantly, promoting Americana, standing up to the private Federal Reserve, winning the trade war so far that we were just responding to and just starting to fight back after our long surrender, and big developments on that front coming up. India and a whole bunch of other giant economies. I mean, India's one of the largest. Really, it's number three in gross production. Is now, nope, we're aligned with Trump, and we're putting big tariffs on China because they had them on us. We've got a strategic deal, and we're going to get rid of all our tariffs on the United States. and they're pledging and are already doing to pass a law that all gold sponsored to be sold in the country comes from the U.S. Just stuff like that. It's happening. Trump said a few weeks ago 50 countries had already called him as soon as he put the tariffs in over the weekend. Now it's over 100, and over 60 have already done deals. We are winning. Our alliance is winning. Our long surrender's over. And the fact that we stayed on air and fought through this and that you supported us to fight through all this abuse and everything that was going on, and the fact that they thought that once I was in bankruptcy and they controlled the company and I wasn't even being paid, that I would quit. I don't care about the fact that I don't have much. It means not. In fact, it's nice. I never really tried to own and buy a few things. I bought a little ranch and stuff so I'd have a backup place and stuff like that. And then that was sold in the bankruptcy. I never had time to even go there. It meant nothing to me. Freedom and my family and all of it. I am so liberated by this persecution, and it has exposed them. Like I said at the show Trials in Texas and Connecticut 2.5 years ago, I said, I'm not on trial here. This is a completely staged event where I've already been found guilty. It's all lies. I can't respond. They don't have to put on evidence. They can just say whatever they want. It's a show trial. They are on trial. The judiciary, the corrupt court system is on trial.
You have, in this case, illegal aliens from Venezuela sent here by Maduro, who are members of a foreign terrorist organization, Tren de Aragua, an organization that the intelligence community has found is operating at the direction of a hostile adversarial foreign regime, carrying out criminal enterprises to destabilize the political system in the United States. Those are the facts when it comes to TDA. So they're all illegal. They're all gang members. They're all foreign terrorists. And now facts. We are being told that they cannot be expelled from our country without an extraordinary amount of individualized adjudication at the district court, circuit court, Supreme Court, up and down, up and down, up and down. No American citizen receives this level of so-called due process. This isn't due process. This is called infinity process to keep you here forever. Yeah. That's what this is.
Oh, no, it's crazy.
No American citizen charged with a crime, with a serious crime inside the United States, a U.S.-born American citizen, receives this kind of process. Millions of dollars in free legal services, representation at every single level. I mean, do you think that there is any, for example, any American citizen who was persecuted, who was innocent related to January 6th? Do you think they could just get this kind of relief, this kind of process?
No.
It was never available to them.
Yeah.
The whole system was rigged against them, just like it's rigged in favor of illegal alien invaders.
That's Stephen Miller bringing the heat, as he always does. And it looks like Trump is not waiting around for the Supreme Court to act to remedy all of this. He's taking matters into his own hands. We've got the latest on how precisely Trump is poised to crush these liberal activist judges, including, if necessary, the Supreme Court. Come on in, gang. Great to see you all here. This is, it's amazing stuff that's unfolding right before us. Now, as many of you know, the Supreme Court issued a rare midnight injunction over the weekend against the Trump administration. That's what Stephen Miller was literally flipping out over. The Supreme Court is at least temporarily preventing the Trump administration from deporting a number of Venezuelan gang members who are, of course, here illegally. The exact reason for the injunction is not quite clear. It could be part of them putting it together with other cases to form a single larger ruling in the next few weeks. But Justice Alito thought the ruling was disgraceful. He even questioned its legality. Same with Justice Thomas as well. Again, we'll have to see how this all plays out at the level of the courts in the next several weeks. But in the meantime, it does look as if the Trump administration has been preparing for precisely this kind of showdown with the courts. But first, let's take a little stroll down memory lane, shall we? Do you remember how liberals were reacting just months ago after the Supreme Court rendered their decision on presidential immunity? Take a look at this.
The Democrats had, like, elected people. The Supreme Court is completely his. You know, I mean, it's so disgraceful, this court, that it shouldn't even be allowed to be called the Supreme Court. You know, I mean, it isn't. It's an insult to Motown to call it the Supreme Court. So it's not even a court. It's only a court in the sense that the court of Louis XVI was a court. You know, I mean, basically, it's a harem, okay? It's a harem. It's Trump's harem. So I always feel sorry for the three real judges on the court. You know, I know a lot of people have jobs, not me, not you. And you have to go to work every day, and there are people you don't like at work. But can you imagine having to go to work every day? Alito? You have to go to work with Alito? With Kavanaugh? You know, I mean, it must be horrible. So what Biden should do, not that you asked, but when they passed that law, the Supreme Court passed that ruling, you know, where they said, you're not the president, you're the king, which is what that ruling is. You can do whatever you want. You can never be, you know, held responsible. I thought, you know, Biden's still the president. No one seems to notice. But Biden should dissolve the Supreme Court.
Dissolve the Supreme Court?
I'm the president. I'm the king now, like you said, and go home.
I mean, those clapping seals, how pathetic. And we saw that again and again and again after they reversed Roe v. Wade. Actually, every time the court ruled in a way that liberals didn't like, you got more and more Democrats openly saying, we need to pack the court. We need to defy the court. We need to impeach all these judges we don't like. AOC was telling Biden he needed to ignore the court after they shot down the constitutionality of his student loan forgiveness, and on and on and on. And now that the court is ruling in a way that they like, well now ignoring the court is the single greatest threat to democracy in the history of the Republic. I mean, it's so utterly pathetic. And what it does is it foregrounds the reality that when all is said and done, this is a civilizational battle. This isn't a battle over the courts. This isn't a battle over D.C. This is a battle over the soul of the nation. And the Democrats are going to use every exploitive weapon they possibly can, no matter how inconsistent, to try to desperately, by their fingertips, hold on to the old liberal world that is disappearing right before their very eyes. But again, the good news here is, regardless, Trump is not waiting around for the Supreme Court to act. Now, I've really benefited from the work of Jeff Childers. I'm not sure how to say his last name, so forgive me if I'm pronouncing it wrong. Childers, I'll just say Childers to make it consistent if I am. He's a lawyer and a very good legal commentator, and I really like his Substack. It's very informative on legal issues, and he's making the argument that Trump has already long been building a case to have Congress pass a continuing resolution, a CR, that would include suspending the writ of habeas corpus, which has been done historically before. So there's precedent for this. So, and it's a very, I'll just give you his basic argument because I think he's right on here. So if you don't know, habeas corpus gives due process rights to anyone detained by the government and gives anyone jailed an in-person court hearing. It also bars indefinite detention. In other words, the federal government can't just disappear people. And so this is the kind of maddening rulings that we've been getting from these lower courts, these activist judges who are all demanding that all 15 to 30 million illegal migrants have to get due process, which is, and they know this, it's completely untenable. It's completely unfeasible. I mean, it would take literally hundreds of years to fulfill that completely unreasonable, and I would argue unlawful, requirement. So there is a constitutional way around that madness. What's so interesting here is that the Constitution prescribes exactly what circumstances habeas corpus can be suspended with. It says in Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2, that habeas corpus can indeed be suspended in cases of rebellion or invasion. So if the perpetrators are legally designated as invaders, then habeas corpus can indeed be suspended. It would be something akin to not having to enact due process before the robber that just broke into your house could be forced to leave, right? Have you seen this meme? There's a great meme that's going around. So a robber breaks into your home. You get your gun out and you chase him out of your house. But then all of a sudden, a judge pops up and says, stop. You can't kick him out without due process, right? That's the absurdity that we're dealing here with these activist judges. And that's exactly how Trump looks like he is handling this. According to Article 1, Section 9, habeas corpus can be suspended in the case of rebellion or invasion. And what President Trump did, of course, right at the very beginning of his 2.0 presidency, one of the first EOs he signed, was he declared mass illegal immigration a what? What did he declare it? It was an invasion, a state of emergency invasion. He used precisely the term that Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution gives him to suspend habeas corpus. And then, secondly, Trump has, as you know, invoked the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, the act at the heart of a number of these key cases, which invokes precedent for wartime-style legal authority over foreign nationals, bypassing peacetime due process requirements and protections. And so what this lawyer is arguing here is that it does look to him as if Trump has been already these past 3 months setting the stage precisely for the suspension of habeas corpus, which he can constitutionally do, but he needs Congress's approval. This was another insight that this fellow had. Past Supreme Court rulings define the power ultimately to suspend the writ as a legislative power, not an executive power. And so Trump appears to be in the process of setting up Congress to pass the suspension of writ for illegals in their next CR, in their next continuing resolution, which would only require a simple majority vote in the Senate, being a budget reconciliation bill. So that's what this lawyer, Jeff Childers, thinks Trump is doing as we speak. All the signs point to the fact that Trump is completely removing the whole issue of due process entirely from the courts, at least when it comes to the mass deportations. It's a very bold, frankly, breathtaking, 4D, 5D chess strategy. And so in the end, Childers argues that Trump more or less is basically painting the Supreme Court into a corner, and they recognize this. Our good friend Larry Schweikert is seeing that as well. Either get on board, Supreme Court, either get on board defending the country against this invasion in your upcoming decision and suspend the need for due process because of the emergency situation yourself, or Trump is going to take it upon himself and render you irrelevant based on his Article 1, Section 9 powers. That's your choice. Either way, these illegal migrants are going home. They're getting deported by the mass millions. Either way, Trump wins. And this lawyer does think in the end, everything is going to work out in Trump's favor. There's just kind of no way around. It's like watching a chess match and you're seeing checkmate is already baked into the cake. It's just a matter of what moves the opponent makes in order to walk into that checkmate. So Trump will win this. And the days of an activist judiciary, at least when it comes to mass deportations, will finally be a thing of the past.
We believe that this executive order is the farthest reaching executive action taken in the history of the Republic to secure our elections. Among numerous other aspects of this executive order, this is going to cut down on illegal immigrants on the voter rolls, ensure that the Department of Homeland Security and the data that they have available is being fully weaponized to ensure that illegal immigrants aren't voting. This will include a citizenship question on the federal voting form for the first time. This executive order instructs the EAC to cut federal funding to states that don't take reasonable steps to secure their election. This calls on the Department of Justice to vigorously prosecute election crimes, particularly in states that we don't believe are in compliance with federal law around election integrity. I could go on and on for a while, sir, but the compliance with National Election Day rules, cracking down and investigating and prosecuting foreign interference in our elections, revoking President Biden's Executive Order 14019, which essentially weaponized government to corrupt and pollute our election process. There's a lot in here, but we believe that these are very important steps that we need to be taking as an administration at your direction to ensure that our elections are as secure as they possibly can be.
Okay.
Oh, the woke left is big mad over this. They are big mad. They are seeing their last and final hope in trying to overturn the MAGA revolution implode right before their panicked eyes. And I'm going to show you exactly why the woke left is really panicked. This is going to absolutely blow you away. Come on in, one and all. Great to see all of you here. As you know, I've been on the road this week. I had a wonderful time in Pima County, Arizona, visiting family out there. Even did a little horseback ride, and you may have seen through the Catalina Valley. It was absolutely beautiful. And I want to wish all of you a blessed Holy Week, a blessed Good Friday, Holy Saturday, and of course, Easter Sunday, when we together celebrate the incorporation of the totality of the cosmos into the transformative life, death, and resurrection of Christ. In the meantime, we've got some astonishing developments in the area of election and integrity that is absolutely flipping out the left. It is, after all, the golden age, most especially for our election. So let's start first with the House. We got to give it up for Speaker Mike Johnson and the House Republicans. They certainly delivered. They passed the SAVE Act in the House vote last week and even managed to get four Democrats to defect and vote for it. The SAVE Act requires proof of U.S. citizenship in order for one to be able to vote. That is, if the act passes the Senate and is signed into law by President Trump, it will basically mandate voter ID in all 50 states permanently from here on in. Johnson noted that while non-citizens are already prohibited from voting in federal elections, there are currently no mechanisms to ensure that the law is always followed. And that's what the SAVE Act seeks to do, provide that proof of citizenship mechanism for all 50 states. Now, of course, the left is just absolutely freaking out over the SAVE Act. Their desperation to try to justify opposition to such common sense election reform is just getting so, I mean, it's just so over the top. The talking point that you're seeing in virtually every left-wing outlet is that the SAVE Act requires last names on documents like driver's licenses to match those on birth certificates. And so it's going to end up preventing millions upon millions of married women who've changed their names upon getting married from being able to register to vote. Ooh, ah, you know, that's their best argument against this. An act implements a legal mechanism that keeps illegals from voting is now going to prevent U.S. women from voting. That's the best they came up with. That's all the Democrats got on this. And of course, it was summarily dismantled by Caroline Leavitt, herself a married woman. Check it out.
The new voter ID requirements may inhibit their access to the polls. What assurances can you give women voters in America to ease their concerns?
Sure. Well, the SAVE Act, as you mentioned, was passed by the House yesterday. This is the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act. I believe I'm getting that correct. And this act is a common sense measure. It would require proof of citizenship for voting in our elections. The Democrats have been fear-mongering about this bill, have been saying that married women, if their name has changed, they didn't change it on their identification, would not be able to vote. That is complete fallacy. There are outlined in the bill about how to avoid that. The president very much supports a common sense solution to ensuring that only citizens can engage in our elections. This is critical to improving the integrity of our elections and also the trust that American citizens need to have in our electoral process. So the president supports this bill, and that is a myth that has been proven wrong by the text of this bill. And I believe some of the co-sponsors of the bill have been very vocal in addressing that. And certainly I myself, as a married woman, would not stand before this podium if the president did not support such a common sense measure. Thank you.
Thinking through this is so easy. This is so there's a reason why they call it the common sense consensus, right? This is so easy. If you're a Democrat that's genuinely worried that this bill, this SAVE Act, may inadvertently impede married women from voting, then you would suggest some very simple tweaks to the bill in order to make sure that doesn't happen. After all, married women inordinately vote Republican. This is your constituency, Republicans. You don't want them to not be able to vote, right? I mean, this is simple, right? Republicans have won married women now for decades, the majority of married women for decades. So this is a Republican constituency. This is not hard. The bill is there to ensure that illegal migrants don't vote. You're concerned, you, a Democrat, are concerned that it may inadvertently prevent certain U.S. citizens from voting, i.e. married women. So you just make sure that there are measures in place to rectify that concern. Solved, right? No problem, right? Right? Wrong. That's not what the Democrats are doing. Instead, they use that made-up possibility that, again, involves a constituency that don't even, by and large, vote for Democrats, ironically. But they use that made-up possibility as a weapon to try to torpedo the bill as a whole. They tried to defeat the SAVE Act entirely. They did nothing to try to amend the bill to make sure that their concerns were assuaged. And of course, being the pathological liars that Democrats are at this point, the leadership, the reason they did not do that is because that's not their real concern. Obviously not. A Republican voting constituency is not their concern. The possibility of preventing married women from voting is not their concern. They don't give a flip or a rip about it. It is official. Klaus Schwab, who was until this weekend the unelected overlord of the globalist elite, is under investigation by the very organization he created back in 1971. This after whistleblowers came forward with allegations of financial misconduct committed by both Schwab and his wife. The Wall Street Journal broke the story after they obtained an anonymous letter that was sent out last week to the organization's board, which raised concerns about the WEF's governance and workplace culture, including allegations that the Schwab family blended their personal affairs with the forum's financial resources without proper oversight. A second source familiar with the matter corroborated the investigation. Among the allegations, Schwab allegedly asked junior employees to withdraw thousands of dollars from ATMs on his behalf. He also allegedly used WEF funds to pay for, quote, private in-room massages at hotels. Yuck. All the while, his wife, Hilda, supposedly had a penchant for scheduling what they called token WEF-funded meetings in order to justify luxurious holiday travel expenses using the organization's funds. Now, apparently, Schwab was absolutely furious over these allegations, and he threatened to retaliate with massive lawsuits of his own. But alas, such threats fell on deaf ears. The board voted over Easter weekend to pursue the investigation, and Schwab, as we now know, in turn resigned as of this past Monday. Now, the key to understanding what's happening here is that this goes way, way, way beyond just getting rid of Klaus Schwab. Don't get me wrong. The fall of Schwab is significant enough. No question. Again, he was, in effect, for decades, the unelected overlord of the globalist elite who sought to impose a singular one-size-fits-all political and economic system on all populations, using their environmental apocalypticism as the chief excuse for such an imposition. In other words, if the world refused to abide by the policies of the WEF, the planet would perish. That was basically their argument that both billionaire and bureaucrat used in their efforts to amass an unprecedented amount of power and wealth into their own hands, all the while consigning to controlled serfdom the vast majority of the global population. So Klaus Schwab's demise is gigantic for sure, no question. But make no mistake, it's no question that all of this is happening in the shadow of January 20th, Inauguration Day, which is another way of saying it's no coincidence that all of this is happening in the shadow of what you did on November 5th. And they knew it. They knew it. Concerns over Trump and the elimination of slush funds like USAID actually dominated this past January's meeting in Davos. Check this out.
Trump has done something no person in the world has ever done before. A dead man, a dead politician, has risen. Somebody who, if we were 4 years ago at Davos, he's buried, dead politically, known to me. He's now returned. This is the greatest comeback in political history of a politician. And then, therefore, he thinks he can do anything.
We need to also factor in not only who's won, which is Trump.
Now, what that fellow is getting at there is precisely what we've been reporting on for years now. Again, we've noted repeatedly that even the New York Times has been admitting that the globalist system that the WEF has helped build and relies on, that world, that globalist system that the WEF uses as its network to implement this neo-feudalized society, has, as of November, completely imploded. It's shattered. Now, up until November, it was already on life support, and this largely because of the rise of BRICS, the dozen or so nations who form a parallel economic bloc that promotes civilizationalism and traditionalism and nationalism, with the OPEC countries that recently joined BRICS, like Iran and the UAE. BRICS now controls close to 50% of the world's oil production, and with China and India's foundational members, it comprises nearly 50% of the world's population. And with Russia and China at the helm, BRICS is a rabidly anti-WEF alliance. And so some months back, the New York Times had already recognized, they were already admitting that the days of the WEF were indeed coming to an end. And this was simply because the world was changing. And it was changing in ways that simply disrupted the very global networks that the WEF had built and relied on to implement its political and corporate agendas. Case in point, I don't think this investigation is a coincidence given the recent virtual elimination of USAID. The WEF and USAID, if again, stands for U.S. Agency for International Development, have had a very controversial and long working relationship together for years. The WEF has long considered USAID a strategic partner. They've collaborated with on various initiatives, including those focused on public-private partnerships, which is just another way of saying billionaire and bureaucrat aligning to impose a one-size-fits-all on everybody else. They've shared global initiatives like climate change and development. Again, this all according to WEF's own website. They've admitted this. They've partnered together on globalist initiatives like the Global Health Alliance, which has been on the forefront of pushing abortion and woke reproductive rights and you know, vaccine mandates around the world. In other words, with the demise of USAID, the WEF is quickly finding that its global network of NGOs that it's relied on as the vascular system, the circulation system of the globe that the WEF could inject its various initiatives into, simply no longer exists. It has been effectively dismantled. With the coming of Trump and the ending of the NGO slush funds like USAID, the WEF is getting cut off from its fundamental source of funding and power. So in other words, it's just another way of saying Trump looks like he basically ended the WEF. Trump broke Davos, quite literally. So obviously we'll be keeping a very close eye on how things develop here in the coming months, but it really does look like the days of the WEF are coming to an end. The golden age has truly dawned.
There has been growing frustration over Donald Trump's new tariffs. I've been watching the news, and I don't think anyone is doing a good job of explaining what is really going on. So I'm going to give you a simple explanation of the tariffs, and it has to do with Hillary Clinton. Do you remember back in 2016 when Donald Trump was running for president against Hillary Clinton?
Last time at the first debate, we had millions of people fact-checking, so I expect we'll have millions more fact-checking because, you know, it is, it's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah, because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
We want to remind the audience to please not talk out loud. Please do not applaud. You're just wasting time.
And Secretary Clinton.
Anderson Cooper was the moderator. I think he needs to calm down. The audience was just having a normal reaction to Trump winning the debate. One of the biggest criticisms against Hillary Clinton during the campaign was about the Clinton Foundation. They talked about it in the third debate.
Then these are questions that the American people have. Secretary Clinton, during your 2009 Senate confirmation hearing, you promised to avoid even the appearance of a conflict of interest with your dealing with the Clinton Foundation while you were Secretary of State. But emails show that donors got special access to you. Those seeking grants for Haiti relief were considered separately from non-donors, and some of those donors got contract, government contracts, taxpayer money. Can you really say that you kept your pledge to that Senate committee? And why isn't what happened and what went on between you and the Clinton Foundation, why isn't it what Mr. Trump calls pay to play?
Well, everything I did as Secretary of State was in furtherance of our country's interests and our values. The State Department has said that. I think that's been proven. But I am happy. In fact, I'm thrilled to talk about the Clinton Foundation because it is a world-renowned charity. And I am so proud of the work that it does. You know, I could talk for the rest of the debate. I know I don't have the time to do that. But just briefly, the Clinton Foundation made it possible for 11 million people around the world with HIV/AIDS to afford treatment. And that's about half of all the people in the world who are getting treatment.
Wait, so Hillary Clinton is giving half the people in all the world treatment for HIV. Something does not seem right about this foundation. Is it possible that it is a scam?
It's a criminal enterprise. Saudi Arabia giving $25 million, Qatar, all of these countries. You talk about women and women's rights. So these are people that push gays off business, off buildings. These are people that kill women and treat women horribly. And yet you take their money. So I'd like to ask you right now, why don't you give back the money that you've taken from certain countries that treat certain groups of people so horribly? Why don't you give back the money? I think it would be a great gesture.
Well,
because she takes a tremendous amount of money, and you take a look at the people of Haiti. I was in Little Haiti the other day in Florida, and I want to tell you, they hate the Clintons, because what's happened in Haiti with the Clinton Foundation is a disgrace. And you know it, and they know it, and everybody knows
Secretary.
It.
Okay. There's a lot we could talk about here, but the general idea is this. Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State under Barack Obama. She would fly around the world to all these different countries as the representative of the U.S. At the same time, she was running her nonprofit foundation, raising money for Haiti. All these governments started donating enormous amounts of money into her foundation, but for some reason, Haiti never seemed to get any better. All this money that supposedly went to Haiti, what did it actually do? I'll give you a specific example of the complaints against the Clinton Foundation. There was a Canadian company called Uranium One. Russia wanted to purchase this company. This company provided 20% of the uranium for the United States. Of course, uranium is important because it is used to make nuclear bombs. So the U.S. had to approve this sale before it could go through. Hillary Clinton was one of the key people who approved this sale to Russia. Here's where things get shady. During the sale, the Clinton Foundation received a $2.35 million donation from the Uranium One chairman. And shortly after the sale was announced, Hillary received a $500,000 payment for a speech in Moscow. Now, these transactions have been looked at extensively, and Hillary Clinton has never been charged with a crime. But you have to admit, it looks pretty suspicious. And there is example after example like this of foreign governments pouring money into the Clinton Foundation. So what does this have to do with Trump's tariffs? Trump is stopping corruption. The reason America has had low tariffs is because of foreign influence peddling, which is a scam that has been happening for a long time. Foreign countries want low tariffs. They would give donations to the foundations of government elites, and miraculously, they would get low tariffs. This is not just a Democrat problem. Republicans were involved in this too. But the Democrats have really become champions for this cause. These are the same allegations we saw with Joe Biden, that he was involved in foreign influence peddling from China and Ukraine. Isn't it unusual that Hunter Biden served on the board of a Ukrainian oil company? When Joe Biden was making decisions about Ukraine, was it really in the best interest of the U.S. or his own pocketbook? Trump's tariffs are putting a stop to the scam. That's why so many people are screaming about it. They don't really have a problem with the tariffs. They have a problem with Trump stopping the money train of foreign payments. Do you remember the scandal over USAID being shut down? DOGE found all these ridiculous payments going to foreign countries and shut them down. People were screaming about it, but the people who were screaming the loudest were the same people benefiting from it. The tariffs are the same thing. The people screaming the loudest about the tariffs are crooked. They are so angry because Trump's tariffs are stopping their money train of foreign payments, just like we saw with the Clinton Foundation. Let me explain what tariffs really are. They are a tax on foreign countries. Any government is funded through taxes. U.S. citizens pay state tax, federal tax, sales tax, property tax, business taxes, and when you die, you pay death taxes. That's right. Even after you're dead, you still have to pay taxes. Most people pay over 50% of their income in some form of taxes, and that is what funds our government. Trump's tariffs are saying that foreign governments should have to pay some of those taxes too. They're getting access to our markets. Why are they not contributing anything? A lot of people don't understand how big the U.S. economy is. It is massive. It dwarfs all other countries. China is second, but there's some question if China's economic statistics are even reliable, so the difference could be even bigger than this. If you're running a business in a different country, you desperately want to get access to the U.S. market because that's where most of the customers are. Well, if they're getting access to this, they should have to pay a little tax. I'm sitting here paying 50% tax, and you're telling me that these countries should pay no tax? I'm sorry, but that is not fair. It's not fair. They should not be getting a free ride. So here is Trump standing next to his table with the proposed tariffs. Many of the tariffs are only 10%. Trump is making things more fair for everyone, because if these countries start paying their fair share, he can then reduce my 50% by giving the American middle class a tax cut. I will just give you my opinion. I think this is brilliant. It's such a good idea, and it is the right thing to do. Now, the financial markets are crashing. I made a whole video on this a few weeks ago. I will link it in the description down below. What I explain is that the markets are crashing because of Trump derangement syndrome. We know this because when you look at economic metrics, they are strong. Inflation is coming down. Gas prices are coming down. Sometimes markets go haywire, but if the economic fundamentals are strong, markets are going to bounce back. Do you remember the Beanie Babies craze in the 90s? There were these stuffed animals, and people went nuts over them. You could buy them at the store for $5, but people were selling them for thousands of dollars. People could not get enough of these stuffed animals. When I look back on that, I think, what was wrong with all of us? What were we thinking? Are these things really that cute that you would pay thousands of dollars for them? My point is that sometimes financial markets go haywire. Crazy things happen. The stock market right now is doing the same thing. But if you focus on economic fundamentals and not try to scam the American people, the markets will come back. That is exactly what Donald Trump is doing.
That's all we have for today's show. As always, we hope you found today's content of interest and value. You can watch and or listen to a podcast of today's show when it's posted shortly here on the Jim Benson Show pages at bbsradio.com/The Jim Benson Show. And elsewhere on the internet, including x.com at James B5030-91977, Rumble.com, and Apple Podcasts. While you're at it, scroll down if you visit my pages at bbsradio.com/The Jim Benson Show. Scroll down and check out our related videos section. Look for us again 2 weeks from today in this same time slot with another episode of the show. Have a great rest of your day and evening.